So we'll continue from the 8th canto, 1st chapter. We are in the 10th verse. Swayambhu Manu is speaking these verses when he is performing austerities. Atma vasyam idam vishvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bunjita magradakasya svidhanam.
Within this universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His super soul feature is present everywhere, wherever there are animate or inanimate beings. Therefore, one should accept only that which is allotted to Him. One should not desire to infringe upon the property of others.
This is the famous verse of the Isopanishad, first verse. So this verse has, as we discussed previously also, this verse has essentially two points. That the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of the whole world. He is present everywhere, both within animate and inanimate beings. The second part of the verse is that, so therefore one should accept whatever is set aside as one's quota by the Supreme Lord. So I explained last week also, we have to globalize the principle that Lord is the proprietor and controller of everything. But we have to accept whatever is set aside as our quota by the Supreme Lord. Whatever is set aside as one's own quota by the Supreme Lord. So usually what is our quota is that is provided by the Supreme Lord locally. It's not that if what we need is provided by the Lord in some other corner of the world, in some other country of the world, then it would make the Lord's creation very incomplete. It would make the material world to be designed imperfectly. What we need, if we have to put so much of effort to get from some other country or something, because we may want something, we may actually try to get from somewhere else, but what we need, it cannot be provided in a very different place or in a very distant place. Then it would mean that the Lord's creation is not perfect. But the same Isopanishad mentions that Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamiva Vashishyate. The Supreme Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, and whatever emanates from Him is also perfect and complete. So Prabhupada, time and again, he mentions in different places that one should not put the world is created in such a way that one need not put too much effort just to actually one need not put too much effort for one's maintenance. If the world is created in such a way that if we have to put too much effort for one's maintenance, then it is a very imperfect creation of the world by the Lord. But the Lord is not created in that manner. So therefore, when we say that one should accept what is set aside as one's quota, it means that on one level, it means that, say for human beings, they are actually supposed to eat the vegetables. Animals, so they have a certain food. So that is on one level, what is one's quota. On another level, what is one's quota is that what is actually provided locally. So therefore, as I mentioned, there are only two things to be globalized. We have to globalize the principle that the Lord is the proprietor and controller of everything. And we have to globalize the principle of localization. It means like principle of accepting what is there locally. That's what this verse essentially means. So I'll just go through the points in the purport. So these instructions of Swayambhuva Manu are meant for the human beings, because Manushya means one who is the follower of Manu. One who is the follower of Manu. And that and then Prabhupada talks about the people's misconception on Manu Samhita. Manu Samhita is provided by Swayambhuva Manu for the sake of the human beings, but people actually, they have a wrong understanding. It is portrayed as a wrong scripture. So Swayambhuva Manu instructs that whatever exists, not only in the spiritual world, but within the material world, is the property of the Supreme Lord, who is present everywhere at the super consciousness. So there are two kinds of Kshetrajna, the living entity, and another Kshetrajna is the super soul, who is present everywhere. So we are allotted a certain portion of the total property of the Supreme Lord, and therefore we have to accept that. And then Prabhupada talks about the idea of perfect communism. So the difference between the communist and the capitalist is that capitalism means what? Wealth distributed unequally. There is a survey which mentions that how there is such a huge gap between the rich people and the poor people in America. The income gap is actually very huge. So that's because of capitalistic culture. Capitalism means wealth distributed unequally. And communism is poverty distributed equally. And that's what Prabhupada saw in Russia, that there is a long queue for actually even the basic necessities. But the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Vedic scriptures talk about the spiritual communism. Spiritual communism. In the material communism, they say that everything belongs to the state. But in the spiritual communism, we say that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. He is the proprietor of everything. Except what is set aside as one's quota, which is set aside as one's quota by the Supreme Lord. So that is the... So Prabhupada talks about the spiritual communism, which is the perfect form of communism. And then Prabhupada says that one should also learn from the Vedic literature that one's body is also not the property of the individual soul, but is given to the individual soul according to his karma. So one's body is also, it is not actually our property. So who is actually the proprietor of the body? Ultimately the Lord is the proprietor. There is a, like in this connection, who is actually the proprietor? There is a verse which comes in the Aila Geet. Pururava, after he became frustrated with his love affair with Urvashi, then he speaks the Aila Geet, which comes in the 11th canto. But there is a verse which is actually very relevant in this connection. Pitro kim swamnu baryaya swaminogne shvagridrayo kim atmana kim sauhridam iti yo navasiyate. One can never decide whose property the body actually is. Does it belong to one's parents? Pitro kim? Because they are given birth to the body. Bharyaya, does the body belong to the wife, one's wife, who gives it pleasure? Or Swaminogne, or does the body belong to one's employer, who orders the body around? Or is it the property of the funeral fire, or of the dogs and vultures, who may ultimately devour the body? Or is it the property of the indwelling soul who partakes in its happiness and distress? Or does the body belong to the intimate friends who encourage and help it? Like that, there's a different questions. And then finally he says, although a man never definitely ascertains the proprietor of the body, he becomes most attached to the body. He becomes most attached to the body. So the material body is a polluted material form heading towards a lowly destination. Yet, when a man stares at the face of a woman, he thinks, oh, that what a good-looking lady. What a charming nose she has got. And see her beautiful smile. So like that, Pururava is speaking this verse that who is actually the proprietor of the body? The same point is mentioned by Prabhupada over here. And then Prabhupada explains that so the actual owner of the body is Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, so therefore he is the actual owner of the body. But the Lord is so merciful that he gives the living entity the opportunity to enjoy varieties of desires in the material bodies, which are nothing but machines. And then he explains that we have the tendency to manufacture many things. But in order to manufacture many things, we need ingredients. And all those ingredients are supplied by the Supreme Lord. All those ingredients are supplied by the Supreme Lord. And then after creating something, we actually take credit for it. Although the ingredients are supplied by the Supreme Lord, and even the brain is supplied by the Lord. It's like sometimes in a village, a snake and some boys were playing, and a snake comes. And seeing the snake, actually boys become afraid and then they run away. And then a strong man comes and then he comes and kills the snake. So he kills the snake and then he goes, and then the boys come and then they take the dead snake around and then they start showing up as if they have killed. So similarly, the scientists, they claim proprietorship, they take credit for making something, although the ingredients are supplied by the Supreme Lord, although even the brain is supplied by the Lord, but then they take credit for something and then they put a patent. So one can take a salary but not claim proprietorship. One can take some salary from the Supreme Lord, but one cannot claim proprietorship. So then here, Vishnu Chakotipad mentions a beautiful point, that if a person has tendency to actually if a person has tendency to construct many things, then one should use that tendency to construct the temples of the Lord. One should actually build the temples of the Lord for the pastimes of the Lord. So then, and when a person constructs temples of the Lord, one should make sure that the temples, the temples are more opulent than one's own house. That is a sign that a person considers the Lord as the proprietor. Otherwise, there are people like who make, they may do some donation, etc. But for the Lord, they just give some small token, and then for their enjoyment, they have like much greater this thing. So Swayambhu Muni is specifically mentioning that the temple should be actually more opulent than one's own house. Then one may say that just like even if one is wealthy, one should enjoy only what is given by the Lord, just as workers are given salary by their master. And one should spend profusely on the Lord and His devotees. One should take the remainder and use that for feeding oneself and one's family. But suppose by hearing that, one's wife and the children, they may actually start protesting. They will not accept such a conduct. Then Manu becomes angry and says that, whose wealth is it? Kasya svit dhanam. Whom does it belong to? So like that, in an angry mood, he speaks the last sentence. So Prabhupada quotes other appropriate verses from the earlier chapter in the 7th canto, that one may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain the body and soul together, but one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. So then finally he says that the result of not accepting the Lord's proprietorship is that one will be punished. One will be punished by the laws of material nature. And such a society is simply nothing but a society of thieves. These are some points in this purport. Next verse. Yam pashyatina pashyantam chakshur yasyana rishyati tam bhutanilayam devam suparnam upadavata.
Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly watches the activities of the world, no one sees Him. However, one should not think that because no one sees Him, he does not see, for His power to see is never diminished. Therefore, everyone should worship the Super Soul who always stays with the individual soul as a friend.
So here, one may get the question, the previous verse is explained that Atma Vashyam Idam Vishwam. The Lord actually is all-pervading. He stays everywhere. But if the Lord dwells everywhere in the universe, then why do we not see Him? And that is answered in this verse. Yam pashyati na pashyantam chakshur yasyana rishyati tam bhuta nilayam devam suparnam upadavata. Upadavata means one should worship. Worship the Suparnam. Worship the uncontaminated Lord residing in all living beings. Bhuta Nilayam. Bhuta Nilayam means He resides in all living entities. I think Devam means uncontaminated Lord residing in all beings, who is the friend of the living entity. Suparnam means the friend of the living entity. And who, though yam pashyati na pashyatam, yam pashyati, though seeing all things, na pashyantam, is not seen, and whose knowledge is never destroyed, chakshur yasya na rishyati. So one does not see the Lord who sees all. So the Lord's jnana shakti, which emanates from His Swarupa, is never destroyed. Swabhaviki Jnana Balakriyacha. The Lord has intrinsic power of Jnana, Bala and Kriya. So just like the simple example given us, the sunlight is not destroyed when the object it reveals are destroyed. So similarly, in the material world, so many things may get destroyed in due course of time. But the Lord who actually has created everything, He is not destroyed. He dwells in all beings, Bhuta Nilayam. Devam, He is free from contamination. Suparna, He is a friend of the Jiva. So these three words are used to describe the Lord. Bhuta Nilayam, Devam and Suparnam. So Prabhupada in His purport, Prabhupada essentially says that one should see the Supreme Lord with jnana chakshu, with the eyes of knowledge. That is why he quotes the verse Oma jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya. So he explains that one has to deliberate when the he says that because we lack perfect knowledge, we cannot see God. But a little deliberation can help us to see God everywhere, and this requires training. So he mentions 2 points: through deliberation and by training. Through deliberation and by training, we can actually see the Supreme Lord. And then, yeah, again he says the point, through deliberation we can understand the Supreme Proprietor. And then he says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always awake. Imam vivasvate yogam praktavan aham avyayam. Although we change our bodies, but he does not change his bodies, and he is always awake. He is ever vigilant. Sarvasya chagam hridi sanni vishtu. And then Prabhupada also gives this example that we cannot see the sun. Although we may not be able to see the sun in the evening or night time, but the sun is not lost. The sun is ever present. And because in this verse, the word Suparna comes. Suparna means the friend of the living entity. So Prabhupada also quotes another famous verse from the Shvetasvatara Upanishad, in which also the word Suparna comes. The two birds in a tree, the famous analogy. One bird is eating the fruits of the tree. The other bird is the friend of this eating bird and giving him remembrance of things he wants to do. Next verse.
Nayasyadyantau madhyam cha Svaparo nantaram bahihi Vishvasyamuni yadyasmat Vishvam cha tadritam mahat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no beginning, no end, and no middle. Nor does he belong to a particular person or a nation. He has no inside or outside. The duality is found within this material world, such as beginning and end, mine and theirs, are all the absent from the personality of Supreme Lord. The universe which emanates from him is another feature of the Lord. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the ultimate truth, and he is complete in greatness.
So this verse explains the pervasive, all-pervasive feature of the Lord. Na yasyadi adi antau madhyam cha. He has no beginning, middle or end. Sva paro na antaram bahihi. He does not consider that anything belongs to him or to anyone else. Sva or paro na antaram bahihi. Sva paro and then na antaram bahihi. He has no inside and no outside. Vishvas yamuni yad yasmad. From him arise the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. Vishvasya amuni yad yasmad. Yad yasmad means from whose form. He is the cause of everything. He is the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction. And Vishvam, he is the form of the universe. Ritam, he is the permanent truth with eternal form, the perfect Brahman. So this verse describes the eternal nature of the Lord's form, or explains the pervasive feature of the Lord. So Prabhupada quotes, talks about the Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. He is the cause of everything. He is everything. He is expanded in everything, but he is not everything. The 9.4 and 5, that Bhagavad Gita, similar to that. So God is great, and how he is great is explained over here. Savishvakaya puruhuta isha. satya svayam jyoti raja puranah dattesya janma dyajayatma shaktya tam vidya yodasya niriha aste.
The entire cosmic manifestation is the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, who has millions of names and unlimited potencies. He is self-effulgent, unborn and changeless. He is the beginning of everything, but he has no beginning. Because he has created this cosmic manifestation by his external energy, the universe appears to be created, maintained and annihilated by him. Nonetheless, he remains inactive in his spiritual energy and is untouched by the activities of the material energy.
So this verse describes again how the Lord is everything. Sa Vishwa Kaya. Kaya means what? Body. Kaya Klesha Bayat. Dukkam Ityeva Yatkarma Kaya Klesha Bayat Yajet. Sakritva Rajasam Tyagam Naiva Tyaga Phalam Labet. Krishna talks about a renunciation in the mode of passion. When a person considers, renounces something because it is troublesome to the body. So Kaya means body. Sa Vishwa Kaya. The Lord has the universe as his body. And Puruhuta Ishaha. Puruhuta Ishaha means he has got many names. He is called by many names. And Isha, he is the controller. Satya, he is the truth. Swayam Jyoti, that means he is self-revealing. Simply by our own efforts, we cannot actually demand the Lord to actually appear. How many of you read that? There was a life comes from life. There is a essay, Hamsaduta Prabhu. That time he was a Swami. So there was one famous atheist in Sri Lanka. He once declared that, okay, if the God is there, if God exists, then I am going to this particular date, this particular hall. If the God exists, he should come and actually reveal himself that I am there. If he doesn't come there, then I declare that God does not exist. So like that, he made a propaganda. And then he called all the people. And then there was a news article was also published. And then Hamsaduta Prabhu was giving a counter reply from him like that. So people actually demand the Lord to appear. But Swayam Jyoti, that means he is self-revealing. If you read the Life Comes From Life, I think appendix or something it is there. Self-revealing. And Ajaha, unborn. Purana, without beginning. And Dattesya, Janma Adi. Janma Adi means creation and Adi, maintenance and destruction. So he carries out the creation and destruction of the universe. How does he carry out? Aja Atma Shaktya. Ajaya Atma Shaktya. So by his external energy, by his Maya Shakti. Ajaya, actually, Ajaya refers to the external energy. By his Ajaya, by his external energy, he carries out the Janma Adi, creation, maintenance and destruction. And Atma Shaktya refers to his internal energy. That means like rejecting her means rejecting the Maya Shakti. By his Atma Shakti, by his internal energy, Tam Vidya Yo Dasya Niriha Aste, the Lord remains indifferent to the Maya Shakti. So that means the Lord is situated in his spiritual energy, he remains indifferent to the Maya Shakti. By using his internal energy, which is his Swarupa Shakti. So this verse describes how the Lord is everything. So Prabhupada talks about how the first paragraph especially talks about this word Puruhuta. The Lord has got many names. And then he says, by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we find that the name has all the potencies of the person. The Lord has a multitude of energies and therefore reacts in multiparious space, yet he has a particular name. So, and then how to understand the Lord? We have to understand the Lord. One has to come to the spiritual energy by taking to devotional service. That is the second paragraph. In order to come to the spiritual, in order to come under the influence of the spiritual energy, one has to practice bhakti. Bhaktiya mam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tatvatah. Those verses are quoted. Shravanam kirtanam smaranam. Next verse. Atagre irsha yakkarma nihante karma hetave iha manohi purusha prayo niham prapadyate.
Therefore, to enable people to reach the stage of activities that are not tinged by fruitive results, great saints first engage people in fruitive activities. For unless one begins by performing activities as recommended in the Shastras, one cannot reach the stage of liberation or activities that produce no reactions.
So in this particular verse, having described the nature of the Supreme Lord, Swayambhu Manu is actually describing that yes, practical way of, he says that Atha Agre. Therefore the sages therefore in the very beginning the sages, Rishaya, what do? They first perform actions in order to be free of action. It means like the whole theme of this verse is that one should not artificially come to the platform of meditation. One has to perform action and dovetail that in the service of Krishna in order to be free of action. So a person by regulated action generally attains inaction. So when a person performs the actions in a regulated manner for the service of the Lord, then a person comes to the stage of naishkarmiya or inaction. The sages also first engage the people in fruitive activities, because unless a person begins by performing activities as recommended in the Shastras, one cannot reach the stage of liberation or activities that produce no reactions. So the whole theme of the Prabhupada's purport, the main theme of the Prabhupada's purport is that one should engage in activities for the service of Krishna. So in that Nectar of Devotion introduction, where Prabhupada explains Sanyabhilashita Shunyam verse, when he explains the word Anushilanam, what does he say? That devotional service is not some idle meditation or some imaginative ecstasy. It is a sort of cultivation. We have to do some practical action. So that is a theme of the purport, Prabhupada's purport also. One should engage in activities for Krishna. There is advice that active persons engage in activities in Krishna consciousness which are called yajna, because then they will gradually come to the platform of devotional service. So Prabhupada has also given Krishna consciousness in an action-oriented manner. Not that you just keep sitting idly there in one place and then not do any action. So then you will go mad actually. So it is like one has to perform actions. That is the whole theme of the purpose. Then first verse he quotes is that Atha Pumbhu Jaya Sreshta Varnashrama Vibhagatah Swanishtadasi Dharmasya Samsiddha Hari Toshanam. One should perform all the actions of Varnashram for the sake of pleasing Hari. And one should please Krishna by acting according to the Guru and not sitting idly. Not sitting idly. And then again he quotes this verse, Naishkarmyam api achyuta bhava varjitam na shobate jnanamalam niranjanam kutapuna shashvad abhadram ishvare. The fourth line, na charpito karma yadapyakaranam. So knowledge of self-realization, even though freed from all material infinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible. So jnanis recommend simply meditation and thinking of Brahman. But if there is no Krishna consciousness, any kind of activity, be it philanthropic, political or social, it will simply cause karma bandhana or bondage to material work. So therefore, first one should perform karma yoga. One should perform karma yoga. That means like one should engage in activities in the service of Krishna. One should, Aru Rukshor Munir Yogam Karma Karana Muchyate Yoga Rudasya Tasyaiva Shama Karana Muchyate. For a beginners, he should actually perform actions. And when a person becomes advanced, then he can actually give up the actions. That's what this verse. And then again, the next verse he quotes is, Karmendriyani Samyamya Ya Aste Manasa Smaran Indriyartan Vimudatma Mithyacharasa Uchyate. So one who restrains the senses and the organs of action, but one's mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. And then the last section of the purport is that one should not imitate Haridas Thakur and do some solitary bhajan. And then he says that there was one devotee who tried to imitate Haridas Thakur by trying to chant and fast for many days in Mayapur. But after 15 days, he became restless and went away. And then he went to the other extreme. So like that. Ihate Bhagavanisho Nahi Tatra Visajyate Atmalabena Purnarto Navasidanti Yenutam.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is full in opulence by His own gain, yet He acts as the creator, maintainer and annihilator of this material world. In spite of acting in that way, He is never entangled. Hence, devotees who follow in His footsteps are also never entangled.
So this is a beautiful verse. The essence of this verse is that the Lord performs actions without getting entangled. Therefore, we should also follow in the footsteps of the Lord and performs actions without getting entangled. Ihate Bhagavan Isho, the Supreme Lord who is the controller, complete in Himself, acts but is not bound by action. Visajyate, He is not bound by action. And similarly, Purnartho means is complete in Himself, self-satisfied. He acts but is not bound by action. And navasidanti ye anutam. Ye anutam means, anu means following. So those who follow the Lord and perform bhakti, they also do not become bound by action. Na avasidanti. They also do not become bound by action. That means like those who follow the Lord, those who receive instructions and bhakti do not become bound up. So therefore Prabhupada's purport here is also the same theme. The purpose of Krishna's appearance is that to teach us how to work so that we will not be entangled. How to work in a way and not get entangled. That's the purpose of Krishna's appearance, Krishna performing many activities. So mamai vamso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatanaha. So we must therefore follow the instructions of Krishna. And then like Krishna, who is never entangled by his material activities of creation, maintenance, annihilation, we will have nothing for which to lament. Like we should also perform actions in such a way that we don't get entangled. And for that we have to take the instructions of Krishna in the Gita. So who can follow Krishna's instructions? When a person becomes a devotee of Krishna, then he can follow his instructions. Next verse. Next is the last in this series of verses. Tamihamanam nirahankritam budam nirashisham purnamananya choditam nirshikshya Nishikshayantam Nijavartma Samstitam Prabhum Prapadye Kila Dharma Bhavanam.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, works just like an ordinary human being. Yet he does not desire to enjoy the fruits of work. He is full in knowledge, free from material desires and divergence, and completely independent. As the supreme teacher of human society, he teaches his own way of activities, and thus he inaugurates the real path of religion. I request everyone to follow him.
So, this way, Swayambhu Muni is concluding. Of course, as I mentioned, Swayambhu Muni is not actually... there's nobody... He's not lecturing to somebody. He was murmuring to himself. All these prayers, that's what is explained previously. So according to Vishnu Chakravarti's translation, because Prabhum Prapadye, Prapadye means Swayambhu Muni is saying that I surrender unto the Lord and who is having all these qualities. Prabhupada is giving, translated in the way that Swayambhu Muni is telling to others, I request everyone to follow him. So Prabhupada's purports are more in the sense in an instructive tone, like trying to impel people to take to follow the path of bhakti, like that. So Prabhum Prapadye, I surrender to the Lord who is Ihamanam. Ihamanam means who is acting for our benefit, or who is Atma Rama. And Nirahankritam, who is free from false ego, or who is without entanglement or desire for gain. Buddham, who is intelligent or completely in knowledge. Nirashisham, who is without desire to enjoy the fruits of his activities. And Purnam, who is complete. Because he is complete, he has no need to fulfill the desires. The next word is very beautiful. Ananya Choditam. Ananya Choditam means he is independent. Or it means that one who is inspired from within, one who is self-inspired. One who is self-inspired. That means, or Vishnu Chakravarti says that one who is ordered by himself. So this is a beautiful thing to meditate upon. Because when a person becomes a devotee, one also gets the qualities of the Supreme Lord. At least 78% of the qualities can be obtained by the living entity. So this quality, the Lord acts being self-inspired. He is not, like Krishna says in the Gita, Name parthasti kartavyam trishilokeshu kinchana nanavaptam avaptavyam varta evacha karmani. Like, I have no duties in the three worlds. I don't have any desire to perform. I don't have anything to get something in return, but still I perform all these actions. So that means Krishna is self-inspired, is ordered by himself. So in our devotional service also, to the extent we are self-inspired, to that extent we will not find that activity as a burden. We will not find it as a burden. As long as, like, initially we may be, if we are dependent on others' inspiration, if we are dependent on being told by others, if we are dependent on being monitored by others, then we will find that activity as a burden. So at least we have to come to a point, after some time, we have to come to a point of doing something on our own self-inspiration. So if we don't come to that point, we will feel burdened, or we will actually, when you are not self-inspired, because after some time, nobody will tell you also. Okay, now there is a monitoring during the Vidyapeeth, there is a monitoring of the attendance, tests, everything is there. But after some years, say maybe 10 years down the line, so there will be hardly any monitoring. So therefore, we have to, sooner we come to the point of actually doing something on our own self-inspiration, it is better. Otherwise, after some time, when people tell you, then you will feel burdened. And then they will also not stop telling you also. And then, and if you are not self-inspired, then you will actually, you will be idle and you will go in the wrong direction. So therefore, that this is an important thing, that we have to be like, okay, we have a certain morning program, attendance, etc. But then, even without that, we have to create a self-inspiration for studying or doing services, etc. So Ananya Choditam, this is the quality of the Lord, one who is ordered by himself, or one who is independent, or one who is self-inspired. And Nrin Sikshya Sikshyantam Nija Vartma Samsitam, who gives instructions to mankind. Nrin means the human society, who gives instructions to human society. Nija Vartma, by his own actions. That means like he demonstrates by his own, demonstrates by his actions, and in that way he teaches the human society. And then the next word is that Prabhum Prapadye Akila Dharma Bhavanam. Akila Dharma Bhavanam means who is situated in Bhakti Yoga and who teaches Bhakti Yoga. Akila Dharma refers to, he propagates the best Dharma. Kila means inferior, Akila means superior. He propagates the best Dharma, that is Bhakti Yoga. So in this way, so I surrender to that Supreme Lord. Or Swami Munna is saying that I request everyone to surrender to that Supreme Lord. The Prabhupada's purport, he says that the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement is that we are simply requesting the humanity to follow in the footsteps of the teacher of Bhagavad Gita. And then he explains that there is a need of a leader in human society. That the organizer of the Krishna consciousness movement is teaching everyone how to follow Lord Ramachandra, how to follow Krishna, how to follow Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So people even now also, they hanker for Rama Rajya. So essentially he says that the purpose of the ISKCON is to teach people how to follow in the footsteps of Krishna, Lord Ram, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Swayambhu Manu has given the book Manu Samhita. Herein he directs us to follow the Supreme Lord in his different incarnations. And finally, Prabhupada quotes this verse. How Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what did he teach? Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Sikshartameka Purusha Puranah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari Kripam Budir Yastamaham Prapadye. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach Vairagya Vidya, detachment, and Nija Bhakti Yoga, devotional service unto himself. Came to teach these things. So therefore, the coherent purpose of Lord Ram, Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to teach human society how to be happy by following the instructions of the Supreme Lord. Next verse. Shri Shuka Vuvacha Iti Mantropanishadam Vyaharantam Samahitam Drishtva Surayatudana Jagdum Abhyadravam Shuda.
Shukdi Goswami continued, Swayambhumanu was thus in a trance chanting the mantras of Vedic instruction known as the Upanishads. Upon seeing him, the Rakshasas and Asuras, being very hungry, wanted to devour him. Therefore, they ran after him with great speed.
So, at this time it is explained that some demons actually attacked Swayambhumanu. So, you can imagine that. Swayambhumanu is is performing austerities in the forest after retirement, as peacefully meditating on the Supreme Lord. But the material world is such a way that nobody is spared. Although a great saintly person does not consider anybody as an enemy, but others may consider him as an enemy. So some demons actually attacked him. So the demons when Swayambhumanu was in Samadhi, demons, thinking that he was a helpless person in deep sleep, demons approached him to eat him because they were hungry. Tamstatavasi tan vikshya yajna sarvagato harihi yamai parivrato devai Hatva Shasatri Vishtapam.
The Supreme Lord Vishnu, who sits in everyone's heart, appearing as Yajnapati, observed that the Rakshasas and demons were going to devour Swayambhumanu. Thus the Lord, accompanied by his son named the Yamas, and by other demigods, killed the demons and Rakshasas. He then took the post of Indra and began to rule the heavenly kingdom.
So at that time Yajna appeared. So this chapter began with that. Shukadev Goswami says that now I will tell the activities of, I already previously described the activities of Kapila Dev. I will describe the activities of Yajna, who is the son of Akuti. So this is basically the activity of Yajna, is just two verses only. So Yajna appeared and killed those demons. And then he ruled in Swarga, surrounded by the Yamas and the Devatas. So Yamas are the sons of the Yajna. So we see that sometimes Lord Vishnu himself becomes Brahma or Indra when there is no suitable person to occupy these posts. So Yajna occupied the post of Indra. Sometimes he occupies the post of, Lord occupies the post of Brahma or even Shiva. Like that. The Laghu Bhagavatamrita is explained that sometimes Vishnu himself becomes a Shiva, sometimes a living entity becomes a Shiva. And also there are certain verses which say that Shiva is actually in between the Jiva Tattva and Vishnu Tattva. So three explanations are given about Shiva. Sometimes Lord Vishnu, sometimes a living entity, or a Shiva Tattva is in between Jiva and Vishnu. Those Brahmas who are actually devotee Brahmas, they go to the spiritual world. So if it's a Karmakanda Brahma, he doesn't go to the spiritual world. It's also explained in a purport in 11th canto. I'll have to just check that where that purport is, but it's mentioned there that some Brahmas go to the spiritual world, some Brahma, they come back here, and some Brahma, they attain liberation, and some devotee, like four categories are explained: Karmi Brahma, Jnani Brahma, and devotee Brahma. Within the devotee Brahma, there are two subcategories. In the case of a Karmi Brahma, one is simply rooted in Karma Kanda. He remains in the material world. He again takes birth, some other form. Jnani Brahma, he attains liberation. And in the case of a devotee Brahma, the pure devotee Brahma, he goes to the Vaikuntha. But there is another devotee Brahma who is a devotee, but he still has some desire to control. And such a devotee Brahma, because he is not completely purified of the desire to control, when his lifetime gets over, he goes into the body of Mahavishnu and sleeps there. And again, he takes birth as Brahma in order to become further purified of the desire to control. So therefore, so the Acharya has explained the point that this shows that how it is so difficult to even to go back to the spiritual world. One has to be completely purified. Unless a person has completely purified the desire to enjoy and control, one cannot go back to the spiritual world.
Word.
Yeah, it's like a post, na? Well, sometimes. Yeah, that's why we can't judge just because somebody is in a particular post, that does not mean that he is necessarily a pure devotee. He's having a certain ability and a certain qualification, therefore, he is actually appointed in that post for doing that service. They are exalted souls, definitely. To equate that to pure devotional service, that is wrong. It is not that all Brahmas are pure devotees.
They have full knowledge. They get knowledge from Lord Himself. And still they don't understand. And what's the possibility of us, the conditioned living entities, to become a pure devotee and go back home, back to God?
Like that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is there. So, like, one should not get disheartened like that. It does, like, just because. From that, we can take inspiration in the positive spirit in order to be cautious. Because when a person has a lot of facilities and lot of facilities for enjoyment, one can get carried away also, or one is a devotee, but at the same time one is attached to certain ways of this thing. Maya is so powerful that even we can understand. That is also a good point. Yeah, they're living in it again. That's why Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami mentions three things. He quotes in some scripture, he says that living entity can become a Shiva. Some scriptures say that sometimes Lord becomes Shiva. And then he mentions that the famous explanation, Shiram Tata Yata Dadi Vikara Visesha Yoga. Shiva Tattva is in between Jiva Tattva and Vishnu Tattva. So all three points are explained. Shiva. That's what Rupa Goswami mentions in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. I can show you the reference. He quotes all three, that living entity can living entity sometimes becomes a Shiva, or the Supreme Lord becomes a Shiva, or Shiva is in between the, sometimes the Shiva Tattva is in between the Jiva and the Vishnu Tattva. All three are there.
Prabhu, this Yajna is same as the Indra which comes to steal the horse of Prithu in that Swayambhu Manu's period?
No, I don't think so. The same Yajna. I'm not sure. I don't know. Anyway, next verse. Swarochisho dvitiyastu Manur Agne Suto Bhavat Jumat Sushena Rochishmat Pramukastasya Chatmaja.
The son of Agni named Swarochisa became the second Manu. His several sons were headed by Dyumat, Sushena, and Rochismat.
First Manvantara is described. Second, after describing Yajna, the second Manvantara, the son of Agni became the Swarochisa, he became the second Manu. So in every Manvantara, as I mentioned, Shukadeva Goswami will describe the Manu, Manu's sons, Indra, the demigods, four, the Saptarishis, and the Manvantara avatar. The six things he will describe for each Manvantara. Now for the second Manvantara, he is describing this. So in the first Manvantara, Swayambhuva was the Manu, his sons were Priyavrata and Uttanupat. The devatas were Yama and others. The seven sages were Marichi and others. Yajna was the avatar and he also became Indra. So this is the first Manvantara. Now the second Manvantara is describing that.
Tatrendro rochanastvasi devascha tushitadaya urjastambada yastapta Rishayo Brahma Vadinaha.
During the reign of Swarochisa, the post of Indra was assumed by Rochana, the son of Yajna. Tushita and others became the principal demigods, and Urja, Stamba, and others became the seven saints. All of them were faithful devotees of the Lord.
So, Indra, the post of Indra was assumed by Rochana, who is the son of Yajna. Tushita and others became the principal devatas. Urjas, Thamba and others became the seven sages. And Vedashira's wife was Tushita. And from her womb was born the avatar named Vibhu. Vibhu was the avatar in the second Manvantara. So this Vibhu, 22nd verse, we'll recite together. Ashtashiti sahasrani munayo yedritavrata
anvasikshan vratam tasya kaumara brahmacharinah. So Vibhu remained a brahmachari, and he, from him, 88,000 saintly persons who are fixed in their vows, they took lessons from Vibhu. So the activities of Vibhu, which is explained as he was a brahmachari, he gave lessons to 88,000 sages. Now the third manvantara. So in the third, fourth and fifth manvantara, the sons of Priyavrata Maharaj, Uttama, Raivata and Tamasa, they became the manus in the third, fourth and fifth manvantara. Tritiya Uttamo Nama Priyavrata Suto Manuhu Pavana Sranjayo Yagya Hotradya Tatsutanrpa.
O King, the third Manu, Uttama, was the son of King Priyavrat. Among the sons of this Manu were Pavana, Sranjaya and Yagnahotra.
So during the reign of third Manu, Pramada and other sons of Vasishta became the seven sages. The Satyas, Vedashrutas and Bhadras became demigods. Satyajit was selected to be Indra, the king of heaven. And the Manvantara Avatara was born from the womb of Sundrata, the wife of Dharma. The Manvantara Avatara is called as Satyasena. And he also appeared with other demigods known as Satyavratas. So the activities of Satyasena was that Satyasena and his friend Satyajit, who was the king of heaven, Indra, they killed all the untruthful, impious and misbehaved yakshas, rakshasas and ghostly living entities who gave pains to other living beings. So I remember reading in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, I couldn't get wanted to refer more, but one of the main duty of a Manvantara avatara is to assist Indra in his rule. Assist Indra in the universal administration, to maintain the planets in the proper this thing, to kill the demons. That was one of the main thing of Manvantara avatara. And also Gopi Parandana Rao mentions one point that the fact that the Lord appears in, he says that because the Manus are so exalted personalities, they are so, they have taken such an important responsibility for leading the mankind. So therefore, the Lord feels obliged to appear in every Manvantara as the Manvantara avatar. Because of his affection towards the Manus who have taken so much of responsibility for leading the mankind. So from that we can understand the Manus are such exalted personalities, and to just blindly burn the Manu Samhita, it is such a ridiculous act actually. But Manu Samhita is written by such an exalted personality who is highly elevated in austerity, knowledge, etc. I remember reading one article also that even one of the professor in JNU, he wrote that these people, like, it is very easy to burn Manu Samhita by quoting certain statements from Manu Samhita. But what is most difficult is that to make a scrutinizing study of Manu Samhita. If a person studies Manu Samhita deeply, you will find many valuable insights also. But people don't want to look into that. They don't want to take the trouble of burning. They just want to see certain statements and then, because Manu Samhita, essentially Manu Samhita, like, it talks about women. They quote certain statements about women, how Manu Samhita speaks strongly about women, they should not do this, if they should not follow this, etc. But actually Manu Samhita does not talk only about women. It talks about all the orders, all the varnas, all the ashramas. When they break the principles of their dharma, like Manu Samhita talks heavily about the brahmanas also, when they actually break the principles of their dharma, what reaction they will get. It is not that it is only against some women or something. It is talking about all the society, what are their dharmas, and when they break those principles, what reactions they will get. So when people selectively read, when they don't do a scrutinizing reading, then they become such fanatical, this thing. So otherwise there are many good sections in Manu Samhita, and we also find the point I made. So like that, the sense. Yeah, and another point Rupa Goswami says that all the Yuga avatars, they are all actually expansions of the Manvantara avatar. So in a particular Manvantara, there is a one Manvantara avatar. And that Manvantara avatar, he expands as the Yuga avatar through each of the Yugas within that Manvantara. Except, of course, the exceptions are Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the original Supreme Personality of God. But otherwise, in other Yugas, the Manvantara avatar expands as the Yuga avatar. Voluminous, also don't know. No, I have no idea actually. Manu Samhita, it's like we have to understand that essentially that, like, just like for example, when somebody manufactures a car, one who has manufactured a car, he gives certain specifications about how to use the car. So one has to act according to those specifications. One has to operate the car according to those specifications. So similarly, the Lord who has created the different bodies, so he gives a certain this thing, how to actually operate the body, what sort of principles one should perform, practice. So in that way, Manu Samhita, because all these, it gives different principles about what one should follow according to different varna and ashram. Vedabhyas says, Manu Samhita, it is like a smriti. Manvantara avatar, that it stays for the whole Manvantara, that, the Leela avataras. Whether they stay for the whole Manvantara, that I don't know. Sometimes the Lord may come in another form, but in broadly speaking, the main one of the main function of Manvantara avatar is to assist Indra. Is there? Assist Indra, yeah. Of course, it's like a sort of general statement. But Manvantara avatar specifically for the assistance of Indra. And also being obliged towards the Manu, who has taken a big responsibility. Next verse. So then the brother of Uttama was celebrated by the name Tamasa. He became the fourth Manu. He had 10 sons headed by Prithu, Kyati, Nara and Ketu. And during the Tamasa Manu, demigods were the Satyakas, Haris and Viras, and Indra was Trishika. The sages in Saptarishi Dham were headed by Jyotir Dhamma. And during Tamasa Manvantara, the sons of Vidruti, they became the demigods. And then, in the course of time, the Vedic authority was lost. And these demigods, by their own powers, protected the Vedic authority. So Prabhupada's purport is that the duty of the demigods is to protect the Vedic authority. And if the Vedic authority is lost, the entire universe becomes chaotic. The entire universe becomes chaotic. And that is what we find, like, nowadays, like, because the Vedic authority is practically getting lost. That is why the society is in chaos. So then in this Manvantara, Lord Vishnu took birth as the form of Hari from the womb of Harini, the wife of Harimeda. So this Lord Hari saved the elephant Gajendra from the clutches of crocodile. So as soon as Shukadeva Goswami mentions this, then Parishit Maharaj asks the question, the 31st verse. Badarayana etate shrotum ichchamahe vayam haririyata gajapatim graha grastam mamumuchat.
King Parikshit said, "My lord, Badarayani, we wish to hear from you in detail how the king of the elephants, when attacked by a crocodile, was delivered by Hari."
So Parishit Maharaj expressed the desire to hear this episode in detail. Therefore, second, third and fourth chapter is Gajendra episode. And then fifth chapter, again Shukadeva Goswami will resume this Manvantara avatar description. And then again, he will mention the name of Ajita. Lord appears as Ajita. And then he assisted in the Samudra Manthan. Then Parishit Maharaj will again ask the question about the Samudra Manthan. The Samudra Manthan is from chapter 5, 6, 7, 8, like that it goes. Tatkatasu mahatpunyam danyam swastyayanam shubham yatra yatrottama shloko bhagavan giyate harihi.
Any literature or narration in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Uttama Shlok, is described and glorified is certainly great, pure, glorious, auspicious, and all good.
So here, Parishit Maharaj is glorifying the narration of Krishna Katha. So Krishna Katha will create a good and auspicious situation. Wherever a speaker holds discourses from these books, and an audience hears him, this will create a good and auspicious situation. Therefore, the preaching of Krishna consciousness must be done very carefully by the members of the Krishna consciousness movement, especially the sannyasis. This will create an auspicious atmosphere. Shri Suta Vuvacha Parikshitaivam Satubadarayani Prayo Pavishtena Katasu Chodita Uvacha Vipra Pratinandya Parthivam Muda Muninam Sadasisma Shrinvata.
Shri Suta Goswami said, "O Brahmanas, when Parikshit Maharaj, who was awaiting impending death, thus requested Shukadeva Goswami to speak, Shukadeva Goswami, encouraged by the king's words, offered respect to the king and spoke with great pleasure in the assembly of sages who desired to hear him."
So then Shukadeva Goswami becomes very much encouraged by his question and then he starts replying. Go to the next chapter. Shri Shuka Uvacha Asid Girivaro Rajam Trikuta Yiti Vishrutaha Shri Rode Navrata Shrima Yojana Yutam Uchritaya.
Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear king, there is a very large mountain called Trikuta. It is 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high. Being surrounded by the ocean of milk, it is very beautifully situated."
So this description itself is mind-boggling. You will see that. It's a very detailed description of the place where Gajendra was staying there. Trikuta mountain of 10,000 yojana size surrounded by an ocean of milk. Huh. So one yojana is how many miles? Huh? 8 miles, na? Yeah. So 80,000 miles. Tavata vistrita pariyak tribhishringaipa yonidim dishakkam rochayanaste raupyayasa hiranmayai anyaischa kakubas sarva ratna dhatu vichitritai nana drumalata gulmai nirgoshai nirjarambasam.
The length and breadth of the mountain are of the same measurement, 80,000 miles. Its three principal peaks, which are made of iron, silver and gold, beautify all directions and the sky. The mountain also has other peaks, which are full of jewels and minerals and are decorated with nice trees, creepers and shrubs. The sounds of the waterfalls on the mountain create a pleasing vibration. In this way, the mountain stands, increasing the beauty of all directions.
So the length and breadth were also the same measurement. So the mountain had three main peaks. So there were other small peaks which are decorated in all eight directions, which are decorating the eight directions. The main, three main peaks were made up of iron, silver and gold. Other peaks which are full of jewels and minerals and were decorated with the trees, creepers and shrubs decorated the eight directions.
Sachavanijya manangri samantat payavurmi bihi karoti shyamalam bhumim harin marakatashmabi.
The ground at the foot of the mountain is always washed by waves of milk that produce emeralds all around in the eight directions, north, south, east, west, and the directions midway between them.
So you see that when the waves of the milk ocean, they would splash, from that many emeralds were actually, emeralds would maybe come from the ocean or by some reactions, emeralds or the different valuable jewels were actually created and they were actually spread in all different directions. So Prabhupada talks about that from the scriptures we come to know that there are different types of oceans. Oil ocean, milk ocean, curd ocean, sweet water ocean, etc. The modern scientists who have only limited experience cannot defy these statements. And they cannot give us full information about any planet, even the planet on which we live. So modern scientists, they can neither prove these statements nor can they disprove these statements. No one has the ability to imitate the activities of material nature as conducted by the Supreme Lord. Next verse.
Siddha Charana Gandharvair Vidya Dharamaho Ragai Kinnarai Rapsarobischa Kridadbir Jushta Kandarai.
The inhabitants of the higher planets, the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Serpents, Kinnaras, and Apsaras go to that mountain to sport. Thus, all the caves of the mountain are full of these denizens of the heavenly planets.
You see that these some of the descriptions can be a little mind-boggling. The Shabda Praman. So Siddhas, they used to go to all these places. The Trikuta Mountain used to be like a holiday spot for all these people from the higher planets, Vidyadharas, Gandharvas, Charanas, Apsaras. They played there. Just like ordinary men play in the salty ocean, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems go to the ocean of milk. They float in the ocean of milk and also enjoy various sports within the caves of Trikuta Mountain. Yatra Sangeeta Sannadair Nadad Gugama Marshaya Abhigarjanti Haraya Shlagina Parashankaya.
Because of the resounding vibrations of the denizens of heaven singing in the caves, the lions there, being very proud of their strength, roar with unbearable envy, thinking that another lion is roaring in that way.
So the many lions there, so they actually, when they heard the sounds of all these inhabitants of the higher planets, they thought that some other lion is actually there. So they also started roaring. So it's like a disease of comparison. People, when they see that somebody else is also equally powerful, then they are affected with the disease of comparison. They start exhibiting their envy. So one point which Prabhupada says is that Lord's creation is colorful and full of varieties. So therefore, this principle of duality and diversity, these are two fundamental aspects of the material world. You will always find a duality and also diversity. There's variety everywhere. But the materialistic civilization, the modern civilization, tries to kill the variety. It tries to kill the variety in all species. Like previously, if you see that there were so many varieties of rice in India. Something like, I think, 200 types of varieties of rice were there. How much? 2 lakhs. Oh, sorry. So somebody said like, so many varieties of rice were there. Like Damodar Chetantru was saying that in Assam, they would, breakfast they would have one type of rice. Lunch they would have another type of rice. Dinner they would have another type of rice. So but now, so because after the Britishers came, etc., now the number of varieties of rice have reduced. Much less actually. So many varieties of cows were there. Now the varieties of cows have reduced. So this is like very fundamental thing. Like people are, they're killing the variety. So they've killed the variety among the animals. They've killed the variety among the, they've destroyed the variety among the vegetables or the grains. So even any description in the Bhagavatam, wherever there is a natural description, whether the Vaikuntha planets or the Bindu Sarovar, the third canto, or in the Lord Shiva's abode in the fourth canto, wherever you find, one common thing is that there are so many names of the trees and the flowers and animals, list of names were mentioned. In the modern, this one, as I always mentioned that, so they have one crop for acres and acres. They kill the variety through artificial this thing. So they have destroyed the variety in the grains, vegetables, animals, etc. And now they are also destroying the diversity among the human beings by making women equal to man. So that is also nothing but, we are actually trying to destroy the diversity by equating women equal to man. So that is actually reflected in so many subtle ways by promoting same type of dress for both of them, same type of, both of them can occupy the same this one, play the same role. This is a completely artificial situation where people destroy the diversity. And even the education system, they also destroy the diversity by saying one, making everyone as an engineer or a doctor or a chartered accountant. The system does not recognize the individual nature. They make one exam for everyone. There are people who will, everyone has different nature, they will excel in different areas. When you make one exam for everyone, some people who fail in the exam, you give them the feeling that as if you are useless. So therefore, the Vedic culture, the Vedic education is basically, the core principle is, it's a personalized, individualistic. Although, like we have this, we are trying to share Bhagavatam, because we have a same pattern of some, it's like a modern education system pattern, since exams, etc. But, it's like, but ultimately, in the sense that it's not that everyone can become a scholar or everyone can become some particular singer or everyone can become this. Everyone has a particular talent. So everybody has the role where they can serve Krishna. So nobody should feel that we should do our best. Bhagavatam is meant for everyone. But just because we can't actually, if I can't score maybe 95 out of 100 or something, no. Or if I can't remember so many shlokas or something, so I should, there's no need to get disheartened. So you learn the principle, whatever is in your capacity, you do your best. But everyone can contribute in different ways, different this thing. The principle of Bhagavatam is meant for everyone, but the point that everyone should become a scholar, or everyone should become a Brahminical, everyone should become, that is not like that. The Vedic system is actually, it recognizes the diversity, it facilitates the diversity. So that is why, as I mentioned, you have to maintain the principle of unity in diversity. The Prabhupada, in the beginning of the movement, there's a famous conversation in which he says that in the beginning of the movement, he mainly encouraged the Brahminicals, like he encouraged everyone to become Brahmanas. Because that when the society first needs the head to function, so he encouraged everyone to become Brahminical. But later at the end of his preaching, 1977, there's a conversation, he says that in the beginning, I encourage everyone to become Brahmana, but you cannot do like that. So everyone has their nature. Some people will become Brahminical, some people will become Kshatriya, some people will become Vaishya, some people will become Shudra. And everyone can attain perfection by serving Krishna. Sve sve karma nyabhirata samsiddhim labate nara swakarma swakarmanatam abhyaja siddhim vindati manava. Something like that. So that verse Prabhupada quotes often. So there is no need to feel disheartened that if I can't become like that. So everybody has their individual this one, and there is room for everyone. So therefore, that diversity should never be destroyed. So that is one of the Prabhupada's point, that he had to emphasize on the Brahminical thing in the beginning of the movement. Prabhupada says that if we have to multiply our preaching, if we have to exponentially grow, we have to introduce the Varnashram system. So if you only concentrate on only the Brahminical people, you will only attract a small section of the people to the movement of Lord Chaitanya. So he says that no, if you have to exponentially grow, then you have to attract all sections of the people. Means like you have to engage all the people according to their nature in the service of the Lord. So this variety is like a very core principle. So the modern system is exactly opposite to that. It tries to kill the diversity. So that is a thing. What's your point, Ro?
Regarding education system, you talk about the diversity is being destroyed. Just like, but this kind of destruction of diversity is seen mostly in India. People are running behind engineering and medical colleges and CE and all these things. But if you see in countries abroad, there are diversities of more diversity than different fields where different students go. It's not like they are only endeavoring for engineering or medical things. And also they are finding new fields in which courses can be accommodated and so on. So kind of like in that sense.
Maybe in one particular, say, but they have destroyed diversity in other fields, like in sense in education, yeah, you may see something, because after some time people also realize that, oh, everyone as an individual this thing. So there is a, yeah, in the West there may be so many other fields. In India mainly maybe engineering or doctor or management or chartered accountant, everyone force into that. But in the West, like if you see in other aspects, there the diversity between man and women is practically gone. They made practically women equal to the men. And they have destroyed the diversity. You will hardly find any varieties of, like in the food or the animals or other this thing. As I mentioned, that one type of, in agriculture, one type of crop for acres and acres. So they have destroyed diversity in many other areas. Maybe in this area, it is in education, there are some diversities there. But and they, the British has made the system in India so that India degrades actually. So in that sense, we are still under the British rule only because we are following their system. So in the Vedic, I had gone to Gokul Dham a few years back. Tomorrow I'm going, again going. So there was one person that he was a lunatic, so madman, especially during the Amavasya and Pournami he becomes, because when there is a full moon and there is a no moon, then at that time he becomes, his madness little increases. But although he was a little madman, lunatic, but he also has a certain role in the society. He is also doing certain services. Other times he does some security service, or certain other services he does. So a devotee was saying that although he is a, like kind of a lunatic, but still he has a role in the society. He is not neglected as if he is completely useless. That means the Vedic culture is so nice that it is accommodating the diverse nature even of a madman and making him feel that he is also valuable. But the modern culture, it makes the normal man feel as if he is a mad or he is useless by making a one kind of exam or one kind of entrance or something. When somebody doesn't get through that, so it has created a, such an image that, oh, that person is useless and has become mad. Huh. So that is the, so one should not fall victim to it. Huh. And so many times parents also, they put so much of pressure, they don't see the individual nature. So this variety we find here, that's why in this description. So the opinion of the materialistic scholars, that geologists, botanists and other so-called scientists speculate about other planetary systems, but being unable to estimate the varieties on other planets, they falsely imagine that all planets but this one are vacant, uninhabited and full of dust. So that is why they have a geocentric conception of the universe. You know, geocentric conception means what? Life is there only in the earth. Earth is the center of the universe. Huh. So Devamrita Maharaj was explaining in the in one of his class. He said that one of the foremost Purana experts in Vedic Western scholarship, he honestly said, one reason why the Puranas have such a bad name and no one pays attention to the Puranas is that because they are too vast and they require too much work from the scholars. So most of your life will be spent trying to devise some methodology of approaching the Puranas, to analyze it and what to speak of, trying to make sense, make some sense of the Puranas. Because the Puranas information like 80,000 miles long, this much height, and the milk ocean, the emeralds are just lying there in the shore of the, this one. So these things, because the modern scholars, they have a, such a limited, narrow this one. So they come to this one, though these Puranas are mythology only. So the material world is, modern civilization is, what is real we consider to be mythology. Mahabharata, Ramayana, Puranas. So all those books are considered to be mythology. And what is actually illusory or mythology, like movies. So for that, if people spend real money. And then they go through real emotions. But what is what is real, they consider as mythology. So therefore, like that. So we'll just take a short break and then we'll continue.
We'll continue. So Prabhupada says that instead of taking the knowledge from the scientists, one should take knowledge from the Mahajans. Seventh verse. Nanaranya Pashuvrata Sankula Dronya Lankrita Chitra Drumasuro Dhyana Kalakanta Vihangama.
The valleys beneath Trikuta mountain are beautifully decorated by many varieties of jungle animals, and in the trees, which are maintained in gardens by the demigods, varieties of birds chirp with sweet voices.
So varieties of animals and birds. So Devamrata Maharaj was saying that the life on other planets, why this information about the life on other planets is covered. So he was quoting that once one of the former defense minister of Canada, he said, I know that life is there on all the planets. In my capacity as defense minister of Canada, I have talked to top American military leaders, and it is all true about the life about other planets. And then when he was asked that, why doesn't the American military come clean? Why don't they actually accept it? So then he said that if the life is there on other planets, if this is true about everything, if that is true, then we have to accept, then everything about our life must also be true. Not only spiritually, materially also. That means that what he is saying is that we have to accept, if we accept the life is there on other planets, then we will have to accept so many other concepts along with that which are there in the scriptures. But people, they don't want to accept many other concepts, many other things which are mentioned in the scriptures. So because of that, although many people believe that, but they don't want to accept and they don't want to actually release that information about the life on other planets. Anyway, next verse. Sarit sarobir achodai pulinair mani valukai devastri majanamoda saura bambu anilair yutai.
Trikut mountain has many lakes and rivers with beaches covered by small gems resembling grains of sand. The water is as clear as crystal, and when the demigod themselves bathe in it, their bodies lend fragrance to the water and the breeze, thus enriching the atmosphere.
So usually, in order to cover the bad odor, we put some deodorant into our body. But here it is explained that the bodies of those the heavenly damsels, they actually emanated fragrance. They gave out fragrance to the water bodies. The water bodies became fragrant because of coming in contact with their bodies. So there is a comparison between, if the heavenly damsels, so this shows the comparison between the humans and the demigods. Then you can imagine how much more beautiful will be the Vaikuntha damsels and how much more beautiful the gopis of Goloka Vrindavan. So like that, there is a comparison. So next verse, you can read the translation, 9-13.
In a valley of Trikut mountain, there was a garden called Trumat. This garden belonged to the great devotee Varuna and was a sporting place for the damsels of the demigods. Flowers and fruits grew there in all seasons. Among them were Mandaras, Parijatas, Patalas, Asokas, Champakas, Chutas, Pialas, panasas, mangoes, amra, tuckus, kramukas, coconut trees, date trees, and pomegranates. There were madukas, palm trees, tamalas, asanas, arjunas, aristas, udumbaras, plexus, banyan tree, kimsukas, and sandalwood trees. There were also pichumardas, kuvidaras, saralas, suradarus, grapes, sugarcane, bananas, jambu, badaris, axas, abhayas, and amalakis.
So there was a garden called as Ritumat, which was owned by Varuna, in which there are flowers and fruits of all seasons. And the list of flowers and fruits were described. So, just like, that is why a community means what? A spiritual community means there should be variety. So, when we have only one kind of people, so therefore in our preaching also, if we preach to only one class of people, some people may be comfortable just preaching only to the certain class or something. But then there has to be, we have to make devotees all classes of people. So when there is only one class of people, it will create an artificial situation. So community means there has to be all varieties of people. So essentially there are four classes, worker class, administrative class, business class, and the intellectual class. All varieties of people should be there. So when there are, when the variety is missing, it will lead to over-dependence. It will lead to over-dependence. And over-dependence on another's mercy will sap it saps the very vitality of the energy. So Varnashram system means it is not over-dependence but interdependence. Interdependence, like we depend on each other. Some people take care of certain needs, some people take care of other needs. So therefore, Yudhishthira Maharaj, I think Vidur told Yudhishthira Maharaj, or Bhishma Dev told Yudhishthira Maharaj, said that a king should maintain the kingdom like a gardener maintains a garden. So that means what? Gardener, how he maintains a garden? Garden has always a varieties of flowers. You yourself find in our Vrindavan garden, there are different types of flowers with, just imagine, suppose if everywhere, if there is only one type of plant is kept, you will find it like boring actually. It will become a, it will not be pleasing to the eyes. But there are so many varieties of plants are there, so many varieties of flowers are there. So a king should maintain the kingdom like a gardener maintains a garden. That means he should not destroy the diversity. So impersonalists, they actually reject the variety in the spiritual realm, and the impersonalists worship Lord Shiva, and the Lord Shiva's abode is filled with variety. Prabhupada mentions in that, I think, the fourth canto purport. Impersonalists worship Lord Shiva. Impersonalists are against variety. But the abode of their worshipper Lord Shiva, that is filled with variety. Next verse, I need the translation, 14 to 19.
In that garden, there was a very large lake filled with shining golden lotus flowers, and the flowers known as Kumuda, Kalara, Utpala, and Satapatra, which added excellent beauty to the mountain. There were also Bilva, Kapita, Jambira, and Balataka trees. Intoxicated bumblebees drank honey and hummed with the chirping of the birds, whose songs were very melodious. The lake was crowded with swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes and flocks of water chickens, datyuhas, koyasthis, and other murmuring birds. Because of the agitating movements of the fish and tortoises, the water was decorated with pollen that had fallen from the lotus flowers. The lake was surrounded by kadamba flowers, vetasa flowers, nalas, nipas, vanjulakas, kundas, kurubakas, asokas, sirisas, kutajas, ingudas, kubjakas, swarnayuthis, nagas, punagas, jatis, malik, Kas, Satapatras, Jalakas, and Madhvi Latas. The banks were also abundantly adorned with varieties of trees that yielded flowers and fruits in all seasons. Thus, the entire mountain stood gloriously decorated.
So many varieties of trees and flowers again. So, Prabhupada explains there are 2 million types of trees. Stavara, that verse, that Navalakshani, that... That there are 20 lakh species of trees, plants are there. Jalaja Navalakshani, Stavara Lakshavimshati. So, Srimad Bhagavatam presents the knowledge even beyond the spiritual world. So now the next 5 verses, 20 to 24, describes the power of Gajendra. Gajendra comes to that place. The power of Gajendra is described. Tatraikada tad girikana nashraya karenu birvarana yuta pascharan sakantakam ki chakavenu vetravad Vishala gulmam prarujan vanaspati.
The leader of the elephants who lived in the forest of the mountain Trikota once wandered toward the lake with his female elephants. He broke many plants, creepers, thickets and trees, not caring for their piercing thorns.
So Gajendra, who lived in the Trikuta mountain, he was wandering along with his female elephants. So he broke many of the trees, etc. So the next verse describes how the many powerful animals, they became fearful of Gajendra and they fled in fear of Gajendra. Yad ganda matra darayo Gajendra Vyagradayo Vyala Mruga Shaka Sakadga Mahoragas Chapi Bayadravanti Sagaura Krishna Sarabhaschamarya
Simply by catching scent of that elephant, all the other elephants, the tigers and the other ferocious animals such as lions, rhinoceroses, great serpents and black and white sarabhas fled in fear. The chamari deer also fled.
So the many, simply by the scent of Gajendra, catching scent of that elephant, I mean, like you can imagine the power of Gajendra. All these powerful animals, they fled in fear. And then lesser powerful animals, less powerful animals, they moved without fear by the mercy of Gajendra. That is explained in the next verse. Vrikavaraha mahisarksha shalya Gopuchya shala vrika markatascha Anyatra kshudra harinasha shadayas Charantya bita yadanugrahena.
By the mercy of this elephant, animals like the foxes, wolves, buffaloes, bears, boars, gopuchas, porcupines, monkeys, rabbits, the other deer, and many other small animals loitered elsewhere in the forest. They were not afraid of him.
Yeah, next verse. Sagarma tapta karibikarenu bir Vruto madachut karabairanudruta Girim garim na parita prakampayan
Nishevyamano likulair madashanai Saro nilam pankajarenu rushitam Jigran viduran madavihvalekshana Vritasvayutena trishardhitena tat Sarovarabhya samatagamadrutam
Surrounded by the herd's other elephants, including females, and followed by the young ones, Gajapati, the leader of the elephants, made Trikut mountain tremble all around because of the weight of his body. He was perspiring, liquor dripped from his mouth, and his vision was overwhelmed by intoxication. He was being served by bumblebees who drank honey, and from a distance he could smell the dust of the lotus flowers, which was carried from the lake by the breeze. Thus surrounded by his associates, who were afflicted by thirst, he soon arrived at the bank of the lake.
So we can see the really a powerful thing of Gajendra. He made even the Trikuta mountain tremble because of the weight of his body. And then the liquid was oozing from his mouth. Surrounded by his associates who were afflicted by thirst, he came to the lake as was his custom. That means like, he would come regularly there. He didn't have least fear. Without fear, he would bathe there, drink there. Vigahya tasmin amrutambu nirmalam Hema ravindot palarenu rushitam Papauni kamam nijapushkarodhrutam Atmanam adbesnapayangataklama
The king of the elephants entered the lake, bathed thoroughly and was relieved of his fatigue. Then, with the aid of his trunk, he drank the cold, clear, nectarian water, which was mixed with the dust of lotus flowers and water lilies, until he was fully satisfied.
So, he drank that water to the full satisfaction. The water was sweet, clear, cold, and he was completely relieved of the fatigue. So, one lesson we can see in this one is that Gajendra was really enjoying. But enjoyment in life should never be at the cost of trouble caused to others. But here in this description we found that how Gajendra, when he was coming there, he actually uprooted some trees and bushes and plants, and so many animals became afraid and they flew. So one's enjoyment should not be at the cost of trouble caused to others. So especially we find in the modern civilization that the so much of advancement or people enjoy sense gratification at the cost of harming the environment, at the cost of slaughtering the animals. So like that, so we can go to any extent. People make so much of comfortable things, but at the cost of such violent activities. So there is one of the costliest car in the world is like Bentley car. You know how the seats of those cars is made? They use the softest leather for the seats of those car. And for that, they actually... A newly born calf is actually killed in a very very abominable manner in order to get the softest leather of the newly born calf. So like that, people enjoy conveniences with crores of rupees, whether a car or building or so many other things, but at the cost of harming the other living entities, at the cost of actually
causing harm to the ecology, environment. And also we find when Gajendra was actually stamping through the garden of Ritumat, he was being pricked by many thorns. It's explained few verses before. He broke many plants, creepers, thickets and trees, not caring for their piercing thorns. But he did not mind the pain he was getting. So that means a person who is completely absorbed in sense gratification doesn't mind the pain involved in it. Doesn't mind the pain involved in that because they feel their mind is absorbed in that. Although they are going to get the miseries later. Next verse. Sapushkareno dhritasikarambubi Nipayayan samsnapayan yatagrihi Grinikarenu karabamscha durmado Nachashta krichram krupano jamayaya.
Like a human being who lacks spiritual knowledge and is too attached to the members of his family, the elephant, being illusioned by the external energy of Krishna, had his wives and children bathe and drink the water. Indeed, he raised water from the lake with his trunk and spread it over them. He did not mind the hard labor involved in this endeavor.
So we can see that Gajendra was really attached to their family. And like a man who is attached to the family, who lacks spiritual knowledge. So Gajendra was actually pleasing his family members, his wives and children, by splashing the water without considering it as a great endeavor. Tam tatra kashchin rupadaiva chodito Graho baliyam charane rushagrahit Yadrucha yaivam yasanam gato gajo Yata balam soti balo vichakrame.
By the arrangement of Providence, O King, a strong crocodile was angry at the elephant and attacked the elephant's leg in the water. The elephant was certainly strong and he tried his best to get free from this danger sent by Providence.
Tataturam yutapatim karenavo Vikrishyamanam tarasabaliyasa Vichukrushur dina diyo pare gaja Parshni graha starayitum na chashakan.
Thereafter, seeing Gajendra in that grave condition, his wives felt very, very sorry and began to cry. The other elephants wanted to help Gajendra, but because of the crocodile's great strength, they could not rescue him by grasping him from behind.
So at that time, suddenly a powerful crocodile came and caught hold of the Gajendra. And Gajendra definitely tried his best to come out of the clutches of the crocodile, but he couldn't come out. And other elephants also tried to help him, but because of the power of crocodile, they could not do anything. And on the other hand, Gajendra and elephant, they were fighting for 1,000 years, pulling each other in and out of the water. Even the demigods were surprised by this fight. Saparanayos chitram amam sata amara. Tato gajendrasya manobalaujasa. Kalena dirgena mahana bodhyaya vikrishyamanasya jaleva sidato
viparyayo bhutsakalam jalaukasa.
Thereafter, because of being pulled into the water and fighting for many long years, that elephant became diminished in his mental, physical and sensual strength. The crocodile, on the contrary, being an animal of the water, increased in enthusiasm, physical strength and sensual power.
So the elephant's strength in his mind, body and senses was reducing. The crocodile's strength was increasing. This is a very famous purport. This also again Prabhupada emphasizes about the importance of Varnashram. The sense. He says that because elephant's bodily strength was diminishing, so naturally it affected his mind. Usually when we become sick, like people also, one becomes, mentally also becomes affected. But however, crocodile, because crocodile was an animal in the water, the crocodile was getting food. But Gajendra, he was basically an animal of the land. He was a very powerful animal. But because he was there in the wrong place, in the water, he was not getting the food. But crocodile, although in one sense he is less powerful compared to Gajendra, but because he is situated in the in his natural place, he was becoming more and more powerful. So therefore, what Prabhupada is saying is that one has to place oneself in the normal condition of life. One has to place oneself in a situation which will be conducive for him. So devotional service is very powerful. But then, in order to practice devotional service sustainably, we have to place ourselves in a situation which will be conducive for us. Which will be conducive for us. So our Krishna conscious movement, so he says that just like Gajendra was fighting with the crocodile, crocodile is compared to the Maya. So the sadhaka has to fight with the Maya. But he will be able to fight with Maya provided he has placed himself in a normal condition of life. Normal condition means the natural condition according to his psychophysical nature. So from the platform of the soul, our natural position is to serve Krishna. Jive Surupahi Krishna Nityadas. But from the point of view of the body, from the point of view of our psychophysical nature, our natural position is to be situated according to the Varna and Ashram, which is actually that it will differ from every person to person. So when you are situated according to our natural position, then we can continue to continue our fight against Maya. So the place oneself in a normal condition of life, it will not be same for everyone. Devotional service is same for everyone because from the platform of the soul, that is actually same for everyone to engage in the service of the Lord. But the normal condition, that will differ from person to person. So to keep themselves fit, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone, and therefore there are divisions of Varnashram. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. And Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. And then Prabhupada is writing this purport. We find that how Prabhupada is giving a timeless message, but at the same time he is making it relevant to the particular context, and he is trying to encourage one of the disciples. So there was one sannyasi at that time in ISKCON. He actually fell from his sannyas. So Prabhupada is writing this purport in relation to that incident. He says that usually sannyas is not recommended in Kali Yuga. You know, there's five things forbidden in Kali Yuga: Ashwamedham, Gavalambam, Sannyasam, Phalapaitrikam, Devarena Sutotpatim Kalau Pancha Vivarjayet. Sannyas is forbidden in Kali Yuga. Even Chaitanya Sarvam Bhattacharya told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that you are such a young sannyasi. You are taken sannyas at a young age. You have to be extremely careful. So then Prabhupada says that for the sake of preaching, we have given sannyas to different people in the case of emergency. He says that one place he mentions that in the absence of a banyan tree, even a small, mentions even a small tree, it appears like a banyan tree. It appears like a big tree. So similarly, in the absence of the preacher, we gave sannyas to different people so that there can be some preachers. But it's not going on in the long run. So, and then he says, usually, you remember in the 7th canto, 15th chapter, when the Prabhupada explains, when Prabhupada wrote a strong purport about the fall down from sannyas. One who falls from sannyas ashram is considered to be eating his own vomit. But here, Prabhupada is encouraging that such a sannyasi that if a person is not able to maintain his vows in the sannyas ashram, one should go to the ashram where the sex life is allowed, and then one should get married but continue the fight against Maya. So what he is emphasizing is that one should never give up the fight against Maya. One should continue the fight against Maya. And in order to continue the fight against Maya, one has to choose a situation which will be suitable for him, which will be actually normal condition for him. So one may stay in whichever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential that one take sannyas. So in this way, Prabhupada is writing a very practical purport. It's a timeless message. But he is giving an important lesson on how to, in order to practice devotional service sustainably, one has to be situated according to one's varna and ashram. So anybody has any points before we go ahead?
Elephant fought for 1,000 years. Is it an allegorical story or is it an actual story?
No, this is a different place. No? They have long lifespan. Because you see the other dimensions. 80,000 miles long. And that much height. A different planet actually. There people had long lifespan.
Hare Krishna, bro. So how to understand what is one's psychophysical nature? In previous times, the spiritual master at a very early age, he used to identify the psychophysical nature of his disciple. But in current time, when we are coming after living for a long time in material world, we don't know what is our psychophysical nature. We just read Sri Prabhupada's books, we understood that this is what is best to progress in spiritual life, and now we are pursuing this path. So how can we understand what is our psychophysical nature?
Like we can see in different ways. One is that we can introspect ourselves. Am I satisfied? That itself is a symptom. That is one thing. And also, traditionally speaking, that somebody, when the samskaras were maintained, so people Brahman in a Brahman family, they would be Brahmana. People born in a Kshatriya family, they would be Kshatriyas. People born in a Vaishya will be Vaishyas. Even today also in India, we find that there are some families, some army people, they will say, oh, we will make our sons also into the army soldiers. So they continue the same, this one. But sometimes people, they say, they just want to enter into some other field, etc. But usually, that particular nature of the father or something, it comes down. So people continue that nature. That is one thing. Through the family, this one we can understand. and sometimes when the samskaras are not maintained properly, then people actually, one gets a completely different nature. Especially people are born as shudras or something. Or they don't have the particular nature. Or sometimes when there is a mixed family, man is from particular family, woman is from different family, then people have a mixture of the different natures. So one thing is that one of the ways to introspect ourselves, to actually, it's not that a person, the brahmachari ashram is not free from lust, but as long as a person is happy continuing to fight, one can continue there. And then regarding the services, we need to, we can have a demand that I will do only the service according to my nature, because this material world is again, it is a place of duality. In order to do something according to your nature, you also have to do something just not according to your nature. So suppose, even in the grihastha ashram, if suppose somebody gets married because he feels that he needs the association of the opposite sex, but then that comes with a package of other things which he will have to do, which is not according to his nature. So maybe if the wife is sick, then wife may say that, okay, you change the diaper of the... And if you say that, I have never done this, it's not my nature to do this. So, but sometimes there is a need of the hour, sometimes you have to do that. So even in the grihastha ashram, suppose if a person is working in a company or something, if you tell the boss that, okay, you give me the job which is according to my nature, and he will say that this is your pink slip and you can go home. There is hardly less opportunity in the outside world that to do something according to your nature. In the same way, so therefore we cannot demand that I will do only something which is according to my nature. Many times in a brahmachari ashram, when there is something need of the hour, although it may not be according to our nature, when we do that, we will make a tremendous spiritual advancement. We will get tremendous blessings. We can't do something according to our nature in the long term. We have to keep doing something according to our nature. And time to time you will get some things which may not be something according to our nature, which also have to be done. So one simple thing is that, are we satisfied doing that? Are we satisfied with that lifestyle? Are we satisfied? That is one thing, that's what I would say. And also, spiritual master sees, and then who are the superiors, they also engage according to the nature. Sometimes we may find that because of the glamour associated with, sometimes people, because everyone is becoming a youth preacher, so I should also become a youth preacher. So we may be thinking that this is my nature, I should also become. That may not be according to our nature, it may be because of the VCO, everyone is doing this, so I should also do that. So one should not get carried away by that, one should see that what I can, and then we may start demanding, I also want to do that. That is not this one. Sometimes a person who is actually a little more advanced, he can see something which we fail to see. So there's a combination of our introspection and then the guidance of others, and then accordingly we make the decision, both in regards to Varna and Ashram. Ultimately the responsibility is with the individual, whatever decision. But here the main point is that one should never give up the fight against Maya. One should continue the fight against Maya. And one should choose a situation which will be favorable for him. Which will be favorable for him. Next verse.
Puji. Puji, in this Prabhupada mentioned that if one is sexually executed, he can enter into grihastha ashram. We see that in brahmacharya ashram we are not free of lust. So what is the limit that we can stay in Brahmacharya Ashram means if agitated, and where we can go in Grastha, and even in Grastha Ashram also he is not free of the lust. Then yeah, what is the point in going there?
Even in the Brahmacharya Ashram, one is not free of the lust. One has to think in terms of that. He says that all the time it is troubling me. All the time the mind is completely consumed by that. Then one has to maybe think about. And when a person needs, sometimes a person enters a Grastha Ashram not because that he is sexually agitated per se. Sometimes a person wants little independence. So then he may actually enter that. And it is not a Brahmacharya Ashram to Grastha Ashram, it is not considered a fall down. It should not be seen as a fall down. It is actually should be seen as a progress. Sometimes people see that as a fall down and then they consider like that. It should be seen as a progress, but one has to appreciate that a person's honesty if a person enters the Grastha Ashram. And ultimately, in the ultimate issue, ashram does not matter. What matters is our continuing to serve the Lord. So one has to see that, like, whether there is all the time when a person is consumed by those thoughts and then like that.
As Prabhupada is telling here, because of emergency, we had to give sannyas to boys who were actually not qualified. And those who have accepted, they had a full faith on Prabhupada, thinking whatever Prabhupada is giving us, thinking our qualification. But then later on they realize ki actually I was not qualified and my nature is different. So now whether they will get the same reaction as it is mentioned for sannyasis fall down, even in such a cases.
Yeah, they will not get the same reaction as the traditionally in the Vedic culture when the sannyasi is supposed to fall down or something. Because in an emergency situation, sometimes in an emergency war, sometimes untrained people are also called for the war. And then they may get injured. Of course, Prabhupada did not force anybody to take sannyas. And sometimes there are people who took sannyas because sannyasis get the full Mahaprasad plate like that. So there was a conception like that. So when people had the wrong idea, they took, and Prabhupada also had that need, and then he encouraged, and then, but Prabhupada is saying that consider it. So he is trying to encourage. So we'll just go through the remaining verses and complete the chapter.
Ittam Gajendra Sayadapa Sankatam Pranasya Dehi Vivasho Yadrichaya Aparayan Atma Vimokshanechiram Dadya vimam buddhimatabhya padyata.
When the king of elephants saw that he was under the clutches of the crocodile by the will of providence, and being embodied and circumstantially helpless, could not save himself from the danger, he was extremely afraid of being killed. He consequently thought for a long time and finally reached the following decision.
So, after fighting for 1,000 years, of course, another point is that sometimes she asks, like, 1,000 years, is it a figurative or is it actually true? Like, one is that sometimes when we are preaching, if somebody is not ready to accept these dimensions, say 1,000 years or 80,000 miles or something, So we need not force on them that, oh, you have to accept this. So sometimes, because especially in the modern this one, sometimes people may not be ready to accept these dimensions. So then we need not force upon them these dimensions. You should not say that, oh, if you don't accept this 80,000 miles, so you are an atheist or something. We do not give such kind of this one. Because that is not the main crux of the whole thing. So you have to focus on the other important aspects of the pastime, about the material world is a danger at every step. Okay, if somebody is not ready to accept the dimension, okay, you don't mention that dimension. Sometimes if we say 1 crore wife, Chitraketu Maharaja's 1 crore wife, then people, sometimes a person, especially in the modern education background, so they all the time keep thinking about that 1 crore, that only. And then they forget the other important part of the story, that, okay, how Chitraketu Maharaj was, although he had everything, just because he was not having a son, he was lamenting. So they forget the other important lessons. So therefore, sometimes instead of mentioning the number 1 crore or something, we can just mention that, oh, he had many, many wives, or he fought for a long time, like that. So that is something we have to keep in mind. So anyway, Gajendra, he thought, the same, this was also adopted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur also. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he, in his book Krishna Samhita, when he wrote that, he did not actually emphasize so much on the historical, the number of years, according to the modern history, the life started at a particular few thousand years back, etc. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not emphasize on that very much, because he wanted to mainly give the Krishna Leela. Therefore he gave focus on the other things, defending the Ras Leela, Krishna's pastimes, he focused on that instead of this thing. So Gajendra, he thought for a long time, and then he finally got the intelligence. Dadya vimam buddhim atabhya padyata. So it is described, when Gajendra, he thought, after a long time, he came to the conclusion, actually this is my karma. When he became situated in this conception that this is my karma, because of that I am being caught by the crocodile, then he got the intelligence. Intelligence, what intelligence he got? He got the intelligence to take shelter of the Lord. So therefore, these two principles come throughout the Bhagavatam. Law of karma and the shelter of Krishna. So both these principles go hand in hand. In the sense, that to the extent we deeply accept the law of karma, and to the extent we can actually, to the extent we accept it is my own karma, I am the bad person, and then to the extent we can deeply take shelter of Krishna. So many times people actually, they take to Krishna consciousness, they may have heard the JOSD class, the law of karma, etc. But to what extent we have actually, in our heart, we have accepted the law of karma. That is something definitely to be introspected about. Because to the extent we accept the law of karma in our heart, the symptom of a person who has accepted the law of karma in his heart is that such a person does not blame others. He does not actually, he gives up the negative or revenge mentality towards others. And a person who has accepted the law of karma in his heart, he is actually dutiful and responsible. He is dutiful and responsible. And you will find many times, even in the devotee circles, they may be practicing bhakti, but because of not accepting the law of karma, there is a very bitter feeling and revenge towards others. And there is they become irresponsible in their duties. Because that
that culture of law of karma is not imbibed. Culture of accepting the law of karma. Whereas you will find, maybe in our, if we try to study your fathers or grandmothers, that generation, they may not be accepted the essence of Krishna consciousness. They may be ritualistic, they were worshipping different demigods, etc. But many times you will find that they have accepted the law of karma naturally. I have seen that there are some of my relatives, the three elderly women, so one elderly lady, like she is 92-93, her husband died before she came to the age. Like she was married at a very young age, and then before she came to the age, the husband died. And then she just remained a widow with a white cloth, and just devoting the whole life in worshipping. Okay, it could be different demigods and Krishna, everyone. So from the essence point of view, she may not be rooted in Krishna consciousness per se, but she's worshipping Krishna also. From the point of view of accepting that law of karma, oh, this is my way of life, and just remained like that throughout this one. And then her sister, like 82, 83, her husband died and they don't have children. And she is also bedridden. And then the third sister, of course, she has many children. And she is trying to take care of these two sisters. So I went to visit them. So one of the sisters, she is saying that, so we have been doing all the rituals, we have been doing all the stotra, all the mantras, we are chanting Vishnu Sahasranam, all these things we are doing. But now we have nobody to take care of us. All three old people, there is no male member in the house. One is 93, she is not able to walk. Another is 82, 83, she is bedridden, and like from there to here to come, it will be like 10 minutes it will take, something like that, to walk. Another sister, she is having her back pain, but she is trying to take care. So she was saying that sometimes we get the thoughts that why God is doing like that, nobody is doing, taking care of us. But I feel bad that I should not think like that to God, it's all my karma. So I felt so inspired how they are actually deeply rooted in that acceptance of law of karma. So that sense, to the extent we deeply accept it is my karma, it is not somebody else, then to that extent we can actually take shelter of Krishna deeply, intensely. So therefore, when we go through reversals, first thing is that we have to accept that it is my karma. And then second step is that, we have to do the needful in a practical level. It is not that accepting the law of karma means you become inactive. When you are diseased or something, you have to accept that it is your karma. And then you have to do the needful in the practical level to get out of the disease. If somebody is cheating you or something, you have to do the needful in the practical level. And then the third step is that you have to take shelter of Krishna to transcend the karma. To transcend the karma. In certain situations, you may not be able to do anything in the practical level. For example, somebody has got a fourth degree cancer. Or fourth level cancer or whatever. So there is nothing left in the practical level. Cancer is spread to each and every part of the body. So all you have to accept is that it's your karma, and you have to take shelter of Krishna. Maybe just take some painkiller or something. But you can't do anything to come out of the cancer. So certain situations you can't do anything in the practical level, only the two things. Otherwise, other situations you can do something in the practical level, but then you have to accept that it is your karma. Otherwise, if you have not accepted it is your karma, even if you solve the situation in the practical level, still that negativity towards some other person will still remain. That will kill you. So therefore, in order to remove that negativity, you have to accept it is my own karma. And that is what... So in the case of Gajendra, first he tried to do his best to come out of the situation, to come out of the clutches of the crocodile. He put his full effort, but after putting his full effort for 1,000 years, he realized that it's not possible. And then he thought for a long time. Then he came to the conclusion, it is my own karma. When he actually came to this conviction, then he got the intelligence to take shelter of Krishna. That intelligence is described in the next verse. So Prabhupada says that everybody is struggling in this world, but only the pious people take shelter of Krishna. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukruti norjuna. So after a considerable thought, he made the correct decision to take shelter of Krishna. Namam ime gyataya aturam gaja. Kutak karinya prabhavanti mochitum. Grahena pashena vidaturavruto. Pyakam chatam yami paramparayanam.
The other elephants, who are my friends and relatives, could not resume me from this danger. What then to speak of my wives? They could not do anything. It is by the will of the providence that I have been attacked by this crocodile, and therefore I shall seek shelter of Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always the shelter of everyone, even of the great personalities.
So therefore, I'll just complete this verses and then we'll take a while. So he is saying that the other elephants could not rescue me from this danger. What then to speak of my wives? It is by the will of the providence that I have been attacked by this crocodile. Therefore, I shall seek shelter of the Supreme Lord, the shelter of everyone. Paramparayanam. So this is the intelligence he got, that I must take shelter of the Lord. So Prabhupada explains here, material world, there is a danger at every step. Padam padam yad vipadam na tesham. So His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj explained, when you talk about danger at every step, it is not simply the physical danger. Sometimes we think danger at every step only in terms of accident or something, or disease or something. He said, anything which distracts us from Krishna, that is a danger. Anything which distracts us from Krishna, that is a danger. It could be some billboard, or it could be some other object or something. That is a danger at every step. The thought of the materialist is that they want to make the material world a comfortable place. In a modern civilization, one thinks that if he has a nice home and a nice car, his life is perfect. So they try to possess a good car. But if he possesses a good car, but there is danger when you are riding in the road, any moment accident can take place. So therefore, the sign of ignorance is that when we want to make the material world a happy place, the sign of real knowledge is that this material world is full of danger. So Prabhupada explained that when somebody asked that, how do you develop the urgency for Krishna consciousness? So Prabhupada said, when you keep always death in the forefront. Of course, not in the sense of you becoming all the time looking tensed or something, but always remembering that, being conscious of that. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says that, Balasya Neha Sharanam Pitarau Narsingha Nartasya Chagadamudanvato Majjato Nau Taptasya Tat Pratividir Yayihanja Sheshtas तावत् विभूतानुभृताम् यत्त्वदुपेक्षितानाम्. So the real protector is actually Krishna. He only saves us from our danger. Our attempts will be useless. So crocodile represents the Maya. We cannot come out of the clutches of Maya by our own effort. Daivi Hesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya Mameveye Prapadyante Maya Midam Tarantite. Only by taking shelter of Krishna, we can actually come out of the clutches of Maya. So therefore, the Mudas are those people who do not take shelter of Krishna. Next verse.
Yakkashchaneshu balinontakoragat
prachanda vegadabhidavato brisham bitam prapannam paripati yadbayan mrityu pradavatyaranam tamimahi.
The Supreme Personality of the Godhead is certainly not known to everyone, but He is very powerful and influential. Therefore, although the serpent of eternal time, which is fearful in force, endlessly chases everyone ready to swallow Him, if one who fears this serpent seeks the shelter of the Lord, the Lord gives him protection. For even the death runs away in the fear of Lord. I therefore surrender unto Him, the great and the powerful supreme authority, who is the actual shelter of everyone.
He says that Aranam Tamimahi, I take shelter of the Supreme Lord, whose powers cannot be understood, but who protects the surrendered souls who are afraid of the strong and quick snake of time, which constantly pursues them and from which death itself flees. So he is taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. We may not be able to understand the power of the Supreme Lord, but even time is afraid of the Supreme Lord. And even death personified is afraid of Krishna. And he protects the surrendered souls. So Prabhupada explains that the great and supreme authority over everyone, the intelligent person understands that there is a great and supreme authority above everything. That is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He appears for two purposes, paritranaya sadunham and vinashayacha dushkritam. So the intelligent decision which Gajendra made is that to surrender to the Supreme Lord. And then to explain this point that how everyone is afraid of the Supreme Lord, even the time is afraid of Krishna, this verse is quoted from the Shruti Mantra, Taittiri Upanishad. Bishasmat Vatapavate Bishodeti Suryaha Bishasmat Agnis Chandrasya Mrityur Davati Panchamaha. Even it is out of fire, the wind is blowing. Kapila Dev also speak a similar verse. The third canto similar verse came that. And then it explained that those who are dushkritis, those who do not have the pious credits, they do not surrender to the Lord. And then it's explained that in the material world, everyone is afraid of death. Everyone is afraid of death. But one may argue that does the devotee not die? No, devotee also has to die because the body is material. But the difference is that one who has surrendered to Krishna, he will die, but he will not again take a birth. For one is surrendered, that is the last body for that person who is surrendered. So then, the last point Prabhupada says is that, I'll mention some points mentioned by Radhanath Swami Maharaj. He said that actually, Prabhupada says that, actually, everyone is caught by the crocodile of time. It is not that only Gajendra is caught by the crocodile of time. Everyone is caught by the crocodile of time. The ultimate goal of life is to come to the understanding of surrendering to Krishna. So Maharaj explained in his class, he said that we have to know that we are all the time in the clutches of a crocodile. So it is not that when we meet with an accident or something, we have come into the clutches of a crocodile. We are all the time under the clutches of a crocodile, and some teeth of a crocodile are not blunt. So therefore, we feel that, oh, now I'm a little comfortable. But it is just a matter of time, the crocodile will change its blunt teeth, and it will change the teeth, and then the sharp teeth will come. And then we'll start actually feeling the miseries. So he said, all the time we are actually in the clutches of the crocodile, and there is no other way to come out of the crocodile of Maya except by surrender to Krishna. And this surrender, it requires to be the qualitative feeling of Gajendra. So what is actually total surrender? Until you surrender like Gajendra, advancement in Krishna consciousness is not about how many verses we have learnt. It is not about how many years we have been around. It is not even about how many times you have gone around Govardhan Hill or how many rounds you have chanted. All these parikramas, all these rounds that you are chanting are all meant to bring us to the point of total surrender. And then of course I mentioned that we are all the time in the jaws of the crocodile, and the crocodile or the Maya is working every second, kalpa after kalpa. And there are different teeth of the crocodile. Some teeth of the crocodile are little pleasure giving, some teeth of the crocodile are pain giving. So this point he always again and again mentioned that moving from the blunt teeth to the sharp teeth is called an illusion. So another name of illusion is Maya. So when we are under the clutches of the blunt teeth, we think we are actually comfortable, but that is actually the illusion. So behind every pleasure which we experience in the material world, we have to understand that there is a crocodile hiding. It is just waiting to devour us. There is a misery which is going to come. So one should not think that one's happiness lies in the material sense gratification. The material sense enjoyment is limited and temporary. So then he mentioned that why in the cinema movies are watched in darkness. The reason is that you can enjoy the movie only when you are in darkness. Only in darkness people can really enjoy the movie. So therefore, similarly, the world is like a cinema theater. Unless we are in Maya, unless we are in darkness, we can never enjoy the illusion of the material world. So cinema is nothing but an illusory real life. So that appears good when we are in darkness, when the lights are switched off. So similarly, the material world appears nice when we are in darkness, when we are in illusion. So just like he said that the crocodile of Maya is eternal. So Maya is eternal, but the manifestations of her are temporary. But Maya is forever. And again, the only way to come out of the Maya is actually by taking shelter of Krishna. And sometimes Maya works by trying to delay our victory. That means like Maya works by trying to delay our surrender to Krishna. So when we take to Krishna consciousness, we are going to get some victory, but Maya tries to delay it by keeping distance between ourselves and Krishna. So, and he mentioned that a mosquito can have the same effect as a crocodile in a city of Bombay where we don't see any crocodiles. It's like mosquito can bite you and then you can go into malaria. That sense, mosquito can cause the same effect as a crocodile. You may say that I don't see any crocodile in Maya, in Bombay. So therefore, in that way, a real devotee is conscious of the time factor.
And then it is the blessing of the Maya that it is giving us suffering so that we can take shelter of Krishna, following in the footsteps of Gajendra. Now, mosquito can bite you and you can get a malaria in that sense. Even the mosquito can act as a crocodile for us, I'm saying. Here, crocodile is troubling Gajendra. But in our case, mosquito can bite us and we may go into malaria and we may be troubled by that, in that sense. The crocodile can come in the form of a mosquito, crocodile can come in the form of other living entity, some other person, or it can come in the form of Adidevic miseries or like that. So I'll stop here. What was your point?
Just on curiosity that the one verse comes in between that demigods were watching and they were amazed, 1,000 years fighting. So like it was just a crocodile, even the demigods could have killed it. They didn't help that case.
Gajendra has not yet called out, no?
But Gajendra was an heavenly elephant, so he belongs to that. Even demigods are watching and they were just watching.
He has not yet called out for them, so therefore he is not helping them. But when he starts reciting his prayers, the demigods thought that maybe he is calling out to us. They became ready. They became ready to go and help Gajendra. But when they continued to hear his prayers, they could understand that actually he is referring to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. He is not calling out to us. So in fact, there is you will see in the next chapter also, demigods became little bit proud. They became little hard-hearted. They did not go and help Gajendra. And then when Vishnu came and helped Gajendra, so they felt actually humbled that, oh, we didn't go and help Gajendra. We became so hard-hearted. And then they tried to pacify the Supreme Lord, but the Lord ignored the demigods. We'll find the next chapter. Grantana Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.